Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Buck Knives out of Post Falls, Idaho. They're my neighbor. Been in business since 1902. The craftsmanship, it's made here in the States. It's got a tremendous amount of history. They're not really a marketing company. They're a knife-making company. I love Buck Knives. They have a whole line for the backcountry. Check out the Pack Light series. They have the Alpha Hunter, the Alpha Pro. I run all those when I'm elk hunting, when I'm deer hunting. So go ahead and check out Buck Knives if you're in the market since 1902. All right, guys, welcome to the Elk Shape Podcast. We are live and in person. These are my favorite kind of podcasts. I don't love doing Zoom ones or on the internet. It's just, this is better.
Right, I agree.
Thanks for coming down today. We this is Sam Rogers, guys. He's met him 5 years ago at Elk Shape Camp. He came in. That was the first camp we ever had Joel Turner at.
Right.
And Joel was on one that day. He was so mean to you guys. We made a YouTube video about it, and it still gets comments to this day. It's hilarious. But Sam and I had a plan to go make a really cool recovery video at his joint in Coeur d'Alene, and life happened. Sam, tell us why we didn't go do that.
Yeah, shameless plug. That place is called Heatpraxia, and as of a couple of weeks ago, we're out of business. A water pipe above us, one floor above us in the building we're in, burst and literally flooded. It flooded three businesses, but we got 90% of the front.
'Cause you're at the bottom.
Of all of it, yeah. And so we're in the we're in a battle with insurance, which is always fun if anyone's ever been through that. And then trying to figure out how do we regroup? Do we rebuild where we were? Do we rebuild in a new location? Do we scrap the whole idea? What do we do? And you know, we're not sure yet, but we're trying to figure it out. We want to rebuild because one, sauna, cold plunge studios, contrast places are popping up all over the U.S. If we don't do it in Coeur d'Alene, someone's going to soon. I know they will.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a market there. People love it. So, yeah, I think we're going to regroup. I always say with business and life, I'm too dumb to quit. And that translates well into elk hunting, too. It's like something, you just got to be too dumb to quit. And eventually, you might succeed. So
that is the name of this podcast title.
Too dumb to quit.
This episode is going to be called Too Dumb to Quit. Well, let's dig in on that for a second. And okay, if there's any awesome lawyers out there, man, reach out. Because, like, check this out. Like, you have two businesses above you that were affected by this, correct?
Three businesses all on the street level. Okay. So one to our left, one to our right, and then us.
Was the upstairs vacant where the pipe burst?
No, it was in the floor between second floor and first floor, a water pipe. Okay. Burst, just that little cold snap.
Who's
we got
the probably really old rich guy who owns multiple real estate, probably,
right,
is my
right.
guess. getting checks from tenants. Who owns the damn building? You don't say his name, but is there one owner that owns
there
the
is yeah, there's a family that owns the building. They haven't been horrible, but they also haven't come forward and been like, let's get you guys whole again, let's make this happen. So
yeah,
which hurts a little bit, but especially, you know, you've been a really good tenant. You've run a really good business. We've actually, our business has brought a lot of value to downtown Coeur d'Alene.
Absolutely.
And a lot of value to that particular building and business owner. So yeah, you know.
Well, the landlord to me, like, you own the building, it's your asset, right? Which also means it's your liability in the same breath, you know? So it's like, that's your pipe. It right. broke. These are your tenants that you are very profitable every month because you've probably owned this building for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably paid off and it's probably a nice little slush fund. Right. So I don't know. That kind of stuff makes me mad. I like when people do right by their tenants, especially right. if your tenants are like paying the rent every month, bringing in a good high clientele.
Yeah, it's dude, I agree with you 100%. It's when you break down life from logical terms like you just did, it's like, okay, this is what should happen and this is what makes sense.
Yeah.
And I found that very rarely that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Is you just end up eating it sometimes.
Yeah.
And I hope that's not the case here. We're hoping and praying. We're all people of faith and we're like, all right, Lord, you know, your will be done. It'll all work out. And maybe, you know, sometimes bad things happen and as it works out in the end, you're like, oh, this was actually supposed to happen to get us to where we're going.
Yeah.
And like I said, we're my business partners and I, we're all very optimistic. We're all very determined humans. And we're just kind of, it phased us for a second. And then we're like, oh, okay. Shrug our shoulders. Let's regroup. Let's go. Because that's all you can do. I mean, otherwise we sit, complain, be the victim, all that crap. And that's just not. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. So let me paint this picture for this place. Like Heatpraxia, I went there with Alicia and it's not like this, like old dungeony, you walk in and there's a bunch of old fat naked dudes. No, you walk in and there's like this tunnel and there's this lighting and it's a vibe,
right,
as the kids right. would say. And there's like infrared rooms where you can get that treatment. You got your sauna rooms. There's cold plunges and the aesthetics. It's the vibe. Like you guys
right,
did,
right.
you made it feel like, it's a little bit higher end.
Right.
It keeps out the riffraff.
Yeah.
And people that are showing up are serious about this is a part of their well-being program protocol.
100%. Yeah. And that was, you know, it was it even before, you know, before the flood, but whenever I would walk in that place, which was just about every day I would take a breath and be like, I honestly can't believe I have anything to do with this place. It was shocking. It was so, so beautiful aesthetically. And then, but even more than that, the testimonies of literally life-saving stuff from sauna and cold plunge, people with high blood pressure, a month later, doc takes them off the meds. People with, I mean, all sorts of depression issues
yes.
off their meds from cold plunging and getting in the heat. And so that was the biggest payback was even if we never make a buck from this business, that's fine. People's lives are changing. And so that was really the payback. And then to make a buck at the end of it would have been nice also.
Yeah.
Right. That's
it
business.
Would be.
Yeah.
I think the sauna that we went into with you, it was kind of like our own private little area, which
right.
was cool. It's not like, it doesn't feel like a health club.
Yeah.
Like I grew up working at health clubs. So
sure.
like, I just remember like some of the weirdest people would hang out in a steam sauna. Anyways, that's not like that. Like everything's kind of compartmentalized. So we had our own area. We got in that sauna with you and got to get to know you really well with my wife. We had great conversations for like 15, 20 minutes. And then we were all soaked in sweat and we're like, hey, let's go hop in the cold bath.
Right. Right.
And all the blood goes rushing to your core.
Yeah.
You're in there for 3 minutes. And then you're, hey, let's get back in the sauna. We're just going right. back and forth. Dude, I know that works.
Yeah, it does. And that, you know, that's the authentic Finnish way to sauna is in here. Like what I'm seeing in America is, everyone wants a protocol, right? They want to go, okay, you're going to go 12 minutes in the heat. You're going to go 2 minutes in the cold plunge. You're going to repeat 3 times, almost like a CrossFit workout, right?
Yeah,
where
like
you've
a prescription.
Got it on the board.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that. If that's what people want to do, cool to have a protocol. But really the Finnish way, the lifestyle of sauna and health is get in there till you're super hot and maybe get a little uncomfortable and then go, you know what? I think I'm going to get in the cold and do that for a couple minutes, maybe a minute, maybe 3 minutes, whatever. And then get back in the hot. And it just becomes a way of life. It's this thing we do. And, you know, I felt it once I started, when I started using sauna 5, 6, 7 years ago, somewhere in there. And it was honestly through Joe Rogan podcast. He started talking about it. And I was like, dude, that sounds legit. And then you start researching health benefits and whatnot. I immediately felt the difference in how I felt mentally, And then my joint pain too. I know it was taking away inflammation. And so that just became like a part of my, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week doing that. And yeah, but then my mom passed away this last year and she had Alzheimer's, and that was a long, you know, crazy battle. And the long-term studies out of Finland show that regular sauna use decreases chances of Alzheimer's dementia by almost 70% across the board. And this is people, they're even taking people who are smokers, people who are drinkers, not necessarily people who are in great shape. And they're like, there's no dementia in Alzheimer's for the people who consistently use sauna. So that's, I mean, it's wild stuff. And, you know, as you and I, you're a lot younger than me, but neither one of us is a 30-year-old anymore. And we're thinking,
that's for damn sure.
Well, we're thinking we still want to be able to climb mountains in another 20 years. We want to be able to pack an elk out 20 years from now. And then I'm thinking about, you know, my dad just turned 85 and he's pretty fired up to bow hunt with me this year. You know, 85. The dude still does pull-ups, push-ups every day, puts the treadmill on level 15,
dude,
walks for half an hour. He's a beast. I mean, that man, he blows my mind all the time. And so he was really primary caretaker for my mom till she passed. And so now he's like, hey, in September, you better be ready because I'm going to be right behind you. And I'm like, dude, let's do it.
Let's do it.
And so my goal this fall for Montana hunting is get my dad an arrow into an elk. That would be rad as an 85-year-old guy.
Dude, that would be the best thing ever.
That'd be so cool, right?
Oh, that's my dream, yeah. Sam, is to be kind of a threat to elk in my 80s.
Cool. That's it.
I do. You know, I won't be able to do what I can do right now. But I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, elk hunting's what keeps you alive. I remember I posted a story 2 days ago. At the time of the recording, it'll be a couple weeks, guys. You probably maybe saw it, but on Instagram, I posted my friend Dave Rimberg. He's like 73 or 74, and he's packing out my bull. Yeah. And I just remember it was a North Idaho bull, so it was steeper than shit. And it was the last load. And I remember being like, Dave, I don't know if you should pack this out, man. And he literally, I've never seen him mad except for that time. He was like, you don't understand. The day I don't pack this out is the day I'll never be able to pack one out again. So his mantra was to always be packing elk, even if it wasn't his, so that he could keep doing it.
So he could do it, yeah.
And I just had so much respect for that. And that was 14 years ago. So I was 28. I was your age, Jeff, over there.
Right.
And when I saw that, I mean, it stuck with me. And here I am, 42, looking back going, he's freaking right, man.
He is.
You just got to keep packing. Yeah. Well, you got to be too dumb to quit.
Yeah, too dumb to. Well, it's, you know, we all know the adage of use it or lose it. And that's my dad with doing pull-ups and push-ups every day.
Yeah.
He's like, he told me this was 20 years ago. He was like, son, can you do a pull-up? I was like, yes, sir, I can do a pull-up. He was like, then do at least one pull-up every day, and you'll never not be able to do a pull-up until one day you fall over dead. But you probably did a pull-up that morning. And, you know, and I was like, it's actually, you think about it, you're like, yeah, that's perfect logic. Like, just keep doing stuff, do whatever you can do.
I saw
a thing, I can't remember where this was, recently, that a poll showed that in America, past the age of 30, the majority of Americans never run a sprint or jump again in their life, not even jump off the ground. And so this guy was like, I jump once a day. He was like, that's 365 jumps a year. At least I jump one time a day and I run a sprint a couple times a week. And I was like, I'm kind of like you, like fitness is a thing. Like I just want to keep doing it and it makes me feel really good. So I still run sprints all the time. You know, I'm 53, but sprints make you feel alive.
I think that's the best workout. Have you ever seen an Olympian sprinter fat?
Dude, they have the best builds on planet Earth.
They
do.
Yeah, they do. Sprinting works.
Right.
It does.
Full body.
Everything.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to sprint if your life depended on it. Like, you know, to go save somebody else's life. So we sprint a lot, especially when the weather, we're getting close to where these doors come up in the gym. Guys, we're podcasting in the old gym, but let's go back, Sam, to 5 years ago. You signed up for an elk shape camp. I know I was in my infancy of doing camps. I'd probably only done a couple at that point. And I knew they were pretty, like, I don't remember if yours was super fitness based, but I do know the very first couple I did was damn near 99% nutrition, training, injury prevention. But you signed up. I don't remember. I do remember you at camp. I remember Joel lighting you up quite a bit. But Take me back 5 years ago. You come to this camp. You had elk hunting pedigree. And you came and you knew probably when you signed up that you were coming to my deal, and you probably could tell I was a pretty intense guy. Like, very intense.
Right.
To the point where it turns some people off, and I totally get it. I just can't help it. You know what I mean? I'm intense about elk hunting. But yeah. Take us back 5 years ago. Where were you at in your elk hunting career?
When I came to that elk shape camp. So I grew up in Montana, but when I turned about 30, I moved to San Diego, and I was
for professional volleyball.
Yeah, I was chasing a pro beach volleyball career, and I won't even tell the story how I got into volleyball in Montana because it's not a guy sport there. But long story, ended up in San Diego, and I was there for a long time till 2018 or 19.
Right.
Yeah, and that's when I had little kids. Now I was married, and I decided I don't really want to raise my kids in San Diego, so was going to take my wife to Montana, and we came and visited Coeur d'Alene. She fell in love with this place more than any of the other places I took her. And so I was like, Coeur d'Alene, are you kidding me? Let's go. And
let's
so
go.
It was 3 months later, we were living in Coeur d'Alene, and I had found someone to run my business in San Diego. And so I got here, and honestly, I knew a couple people that I knew from like a Bible study we were in, but that was it. I didn't know anyone who elk hunted up here. I knew a lot of people in Montana, but I had been watching Elk Shape since maybe, I don't even know when you started, but 2012, 13.
Yeah.
Even before that, was every now and then you would post something Elk Shape, and somehow I stumbled on it on YouTube, and I think I got on your email list. And so you were going to do an Elk Shape camp right here at Spokane Valley Archery.
Yep.
And selfishly, I was like, I'm going there to meet Dan. I'm going there to meet hopefully a few other people.
Yeah.
And I can have, you know, some archery community and other people around here. And that was, it wasn't at that time as much to learn about elk hunting, because I had grown up elk hunting.
Yeah.
I think at that time I'd killed about 10 elk with a bow. And
that's, you know, a lot.
I'd killed a lot with a rifle before that. So I'd kind of broken the code of how to kill an elk with my bow.
Yep.
It took me 7 years of bow hunting to finally get an arrow into an elk.
I feel like, you.
Yeah. Chasing elk for years and thinking, it can't be done. It can't be done, until finally it was the easiest thing in the world. And it was like something clicked with how to call, how to move in, how to do these things. And I was like, oh.
How to do 177 things right at the right time.
At the right time, and have the wind right, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but anyway, I ended up.
Did you meet some people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Adam and Josh, Ivy, became real good friends with those guys. Got to know you better.
Yep.
And then, you know, over time, you and I have just sparingly stayed in touch with each other, and a few things collided, and we're getting to know each other better. And then, yeah, through that, you know, it just kind of grew, and meeting more people, which is, I wasn't necessarily looking for hunting partners, but I was just looking for other people the rest of the year. Who do I shoot my bow with? It's good to
have. That is such a good point, man. I know I've touched on it, but like, it's the community that you,
right.
We don't advertise that you get signed up. You didn't know that you're going to meet the Ivy brothers.
Right. Right.
And
right. Exactly.
Now one of them runs one of your things for you, and you guys have shot archery together and elk hunting together. And it's just, it's these relationships in life that are what last.
Yeah. 100%.
Cool.
Because otherwise it's not like, okay, had I met no one in North Idaho, would I still shoot my bow all the time? Yep. Would I still go elk hunt all the time? Yep. I would still do that. But you're just kind of feel alone. You're like, am I the only guy that does this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
But so it's cool to know other people. But I did, you know, the Elk Shape Camp, I did learn some things. One, I would have sworn I didn't have target panic. I mean, I would have put money that there is nothing that can shake me. You're not going to get me off target. You're not going to get me to punch a trigger. I mean, I would have sworn that until Joel Turner showed me that you have a weak mind, dude. And that really woke me up to the fact that, what have I been doing all these years? And has it just been luck, or, you know, what is a controlled shot, the whole thing? And he really changed how I shoot a bow a lot.
Mm.
And I'll forever be grateful to that. I liked the Elk Shape Camp. One, I don't know if anyone ever brings that. I liked the fact that you had a financial planner guy there.
Yeah.
And my finances, there was a time when I was chasing the volleyball thing that I was so far in debt, dude, because all I was doing was putting airline tickets on credit cards, flying to Florida and Georgia, playing tournaments, and never making winnings back. But I was chasing the dream, and I was way in credit card debt.
Yeah.
And it was my dad who actually was going to build a house in Montana. He was like, you come up here, help me build this entire house, I'll wipe out your credit card debt, but I'm not paying you to build the house. So I did that. I took 4 months and helped him build a house to be debt-free again. And I learned my lesson. It was like,
It's a damn good lesson.
Yeah,
man.
Budgeting is an important thing, and never getting too stretched. And but the fact that I can't even remember the guy you had there,
Jeff Bynum.
Jeff Bynum, yeah, super cool guy.
Yep.
Jeff Bynum, shout out to you. I follow you on Instagram. You're a hero.
He's a good follow.
Yeah, he seems like a good dude. But just he broke it down to like, and you and I were talking in your house before the podcast about how expensive a pound of elk meat turns out to be. Is, you know, by the time you put trucks, bows, campers, tags, everything you do
and
all
time.
Year, yeah, you might as well go buy a bison or a cow if you're looking to save money. You're not going to save money, but it's the experience and it's the challenge is what, I mean, to me, that's
and
what
it's what motivates
is.
Me to do all this stuff
right.
we just did
yeah.
today.
Right.
We went and shot bows at the archery range. We'll talk about in a second. We just did a terrible workout.
Right.
I don't really have interest in doing those things if I don't have a why.
I'm
you know what I mean?
100% the same way. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why people, why does the budgeting thing get overlooked, Sam? Like, elk hunting is so expensive.
Right.
And how can you justify going in debt or putting things on a card, especially if you're married and have kids?
Right.
So that you can selfishly go elk hunt. I know that might make some people mad, but I'm just speaking the truth. Like, man, elk hunting is kind of a way of life slash a luxury item.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't pay your mortgage, you're in trouble.
Right.
If you don't go elk hunting, you're not in trouble.
Very different thing when and I've heard you say in the past, like you had quit jobs
because
the boss wasn't going to let you off in September to go elk hunting.
Gold's Gym Boise.
Yeah.
Fact check.
Now,
I quit for elk hunting.
I quit jobs because my boss wouldn't let me off to go to a beach volleyball tournament.
Yep.
I quit jobs because I couldn't get it off to go elk hunting. And that's honestly when one of the things to be an entrepreneur and run my own show, which so you can take time off when you want. But what people don't understand is, you know, the Cam Haynes must be nice. It's like they don't understand the hours and the effort you put in the rest of the year to get that time off.
Yep.
And they don't understand what the last 2 weeks of August look like, all the scrambling you do to try to make sure things are lined up for the time you're going to be away. But back to the budgeting thing. Yeah, like you with one, at least for me, once I'm married and with kids, the whole game changed.
Yes.
Financial game changed in my life and priorities changed in my life. It's like
complete shift.
Yeah. So would I give up elk hunting if there was no money to take care of my family? Absolutely. I'm trying to never get in that position.
Amen
right?
to that. But
but it's like the priority changes. So everything at home and life with kids has got to be lined up and dialed in. Wife's got to feel okay about me being gone for X amount of days. And it's been, you know, I've been on, few years ago, the year before I moved up here, my buddy and I, Steve, who's a owner of two of the companies, actually three of the companies that I'm partnered in Coeur d'Alene, he and I left like beginning of September, drove all the way to Montana. We both have Montana tags, 20 straight days, never fired an arrow at an elk, and it was time was up. So we went back down. But Montana has that long archery season, right? I get home and honestly, I was moping around like a baby.
I would be
and
as well.
After 2 days, my wife, Kelly, God bless her soul. She goes, you, she's shaking her head. Like, no, she goes, you want to go back, don't you? And I go, yeah, I want to go back real bad. And she's like, all right, here's the deal. If you go up there and don't kill an elk, she goes, you are not allowed to come back and have a bad attitude for a year.
That's fair.
And I said, if I don't kill an elk, I'm going to be a joy to be around if you let me go. Right. And I'm kind of the man, she always goes, you just do what you want anyway. She goes,
I've heard that.
She goes, you pretend you ask permission, but she was like, you were going to go anyways. I'm like, yeah, I was.
Sam, we got some stuff in common.
But yeah, but she gave me the red light and thumbs up and that meant everything. And we drive 24 hours straight back to Montana. The next day, kill 2 6-point bulls in a 4-hour time frame. And we're on our way back to San Diego. And I'm sending her pictures and she's like, you've got to be kidding me. Unreal. I was like, dude, it was a magic day, October 3rd. Bulls, you bugled, they came running. And I was like, I don't know what happened that day, but there must have been cows in estrus.
I mean, how many days have you had? It felt kind of a long time, Sam. You're 53.
Right.
How many days on one hand can you count where it was magical, where you could just go, yo, and they're coming.
And here come, yeah, like maybe 2 or 3 in 30 something years.
Thank God you went back, man.
Oh, right. I mean, it was crazy. I don't know what was going on with those elk, but yeah, it was the coolest thing ever. Yeah. We shot one in the morning, packed him out, three of us, in one trip. It was like 3.5 miles to the truck. Get there, and the guy who tagged that one, he was like, "Well, I'm gonna take it to the locker in town." He's like, "You guys ready to go?" And Steve and I look at each other. We're like, "Hey, can you pick us up about 3 hours after dark right here? We're going back up," because there was three or four bulls bugling up there. So we turned around, hiked 3.5 miles uphill again, took a little nap. And then that evening, my buddy Steve, he called and raked in this bull to 18 yards and whack. Yeah, it was amazing.
That's an epic story, dude.
Best day ever.
Dude, yeah. So we went to the range today, man. Have you ever shot Spokane Valley Archery's little 3D course?
Only one time before, a year ago. Yeah.
It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And we totally don't shoot it normal. I never shoot it the same way. I just go up there and just kind of make stuff up. And it was so much fun today, man.
Yeah. It was yesterday when you said we were going to go out there. I'm looking at the weather forecast. I was like, dude, we are going to get drenched. Turned out, beautiful day. Sun came out.
No wind, no rain.
It was perfect. And like about 40 degrees. So
yeah, it was 42 when I pulled up. I was like, no way.
Epic.
Pretty cool to shoot 3D targets in February. It's not very common. Shot of the day for you, in my opinion, was that mountain goat at like, it wasn't 65. It was further. It was 80.
Right, 80 yards.
Was it 80-yard mountain goat? Second mountain goat.
Right.
The one on the right. I watched it through my binoculars just... smack. I think you caught the 12 ring or at least the 10. It was a beautiful shot. I said, dude, that's on video. So nice. I can't wait to show that part.
Right. Don't show all the bad shots, huh?
There was not. You shot great, man. You're a good shot. What bow were you using?
That was a PSE Mach 30, the new carbon bow from PSE.
This year's bow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I've been shooting the PSE carbon bows, and I honestly, I like them. I love that cam, and I like how stinking light they are for hunting.
Yeah.
It's just you're shaving pounds off. But I don't know. I get along with them well and shoot them decent.
You had the Quivalizer on there. Do you hunt with that?
I did. Yeah, I did last year for the first time. And the Ivy Brothers got me into that.
Yep.
Got me to try one. And I like it. It works well as a stabilizer, a front stabilizer, and it carries your arrows. I think it's a little awkward getting the arrow out of the quiver. You kind of have to. So it's a little awkward. And I keep thinking about how I could mount it or change it. And then sometimes I'll run, like a tight spot quiver on the side and run a stabilizer out front, sometimes a side or back bar. But like you, I've been messing around with what I think will work best for hunting.
Yeah, and it's an evolving door until you're like absolutely confident.
Right.
You know.
And I'm kind of like, for hunting, I set my bow up, honestly, as light as I can get it.
Yeah.
Like I just want it ultra light because most of the time I'm just carrying it around.
That's kind of what elk hunting is.
Right. Yeah. You're bow hiking.
You had was it a Hamsky Trinity rest?
Yeah. Hybrid hunter, I guess.
Hybrid hunter.
Like a couple years old. Yeah.
You had a black gold, five pin.
3 pin slider.
Slider. You shot the hinge. Oh. No, the thumb button, Joel Turner's.
Yeah. The Onyx click.
Click.
The clicker. Yeah. Yeah. I've always hunted with index.
Yeah.
But I set it up, I think, kind of like you do, like very short, wrap your whole hand around it and pull through. But what I found is when I get in the heat of the moment, I don't do a lot of pull through with an index.
Sure.
I get my pin on an elk send it.
Yeah.
And I often don't even remember what happened. And so this year, I've shot a hinge before. I've shot thumb buttons and practice, trained, and then I always have switched. So this year I am committed. I'm hunting with the click. I've been shooting it pretty good. I think
you have two?
Yeah, I have two.
Okay, you're a backup?
Yeah, I got a backup.
Yeah.
And I actually got, there's a company, I can't remember, Archery something products, AOT, that has a little clasp thing. You can actually put it on your bow. Because that was always the problem too. I'm like, I got to put this thing in my vinyl pouch. And then I'm gonna
do one of those. Sam.
So I got one of those little deals.
I haven't done that.
That way it will always be on my bow. I'll never forget it. It's on there. So
I'm into that.
Yeah. I think it's a good
idea. Tell me about your arrow too. Like I know you're shooting with a target arrow, like a
XX
23s.
I think they're 23s. So
but what was your hunting arrow in that? I saw your hunting.
Oh yeah. So that's been 4 or 5 years ago. I started shooting those Day 6 arrows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Day 6 arrows. I like them. I mean, they come super straight. They're really durable arrows. And I think the overall, with 100 grain broadhead or field point, those are 465 grains.
Nice.
And so I've never gone much heavier than
that's a 4 mil, right?
Yeah, four mil.
Yep.
So that's kind of my, like, I'm middle of the row with weight. And, you know, I've always shot 100 grain broadhead, mostly iron wills the last 5 years. But somewhere like 440 to 470 is where I like the
trajectory. That's where I've been. That's where I've been the most.
And I understand the super heavy arrow thing. I do. I think penetration wise, yeah, it makes sense. But trajectory wise, I think it's horrible. And you know, I have a 28 and a half inch draw length, so I'm not like super long.
You're not very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I like that 450-ish, a little heavier, and penetration has not been an issue. Like, I'm getting pass-throughs on most things, so I'm happy.
So we were talking on the range. We were both kind of like comparing notes with iron wills and blood trails and recoveries, and it seems like we're both on the same page as far as like we're both going to probably try wides this year on elk. Are you going to go 150 wide solid or like 125 vented? Why?
I don't like the vented iron wills because they're so loud. Yeah. Yeah.
Stuck.
So yeah, I'll go solids on those. I have some of the, actually the 100 grain vented they make.
Okay.
I have some of those and they shoot. I mean, they shoot really well.
Yes.
But they're loud.
Yes.
And so I haven't used them for hunting. So I don't know. If I go the solid, I'd probably bump up to this.
I think you can get the wides solid if you do that Snyder core.
Okay.
Glue in.
There you go.
For your 4 mil. Don't quote me on that, but I know I was talking to Bill actually last week, and I was like trying to get him to make a 125 wide.
Solid.
Solid. Yeah,
that'd be nice.
And Bill's tough. He's stubborn.
Yeah.
But I can bend his ear. I mean, if he listened to me, we'd have a 3-blade out by now.
Right.
But we don't.
Yep.
So here we are. But yeah, I do think he said that it's 135 total weight with the Snyder core, which I think that's a good
that's
compromise.
That's not bad at all.
So. Yeah. That'll be cool. And then we came to the gym.
Right.
And we worked out and I asked you, I was like, yo, Sam, what do you do for workouts? Give your answer because I thought it was beautiful. Try to remember, paraphrase what you said, but it was perfect.
Yeah. So I'm not on a specific program, but here's the boxes I check every week is at least once a week, sometimes twice, but at least once, deadlift heavy for me. So work all the way up to like a three rep set, same with squats. I'll go heavy for me. Same with bench press. And usually bench press, I do dumbbell presses, overhead press. And then I do a lot of pull-ups. Some rows, but more pull-ups. And then do core stuff every day. Although I found out today that I don't do enough core stuff. We did so many sit-ups in this workout we did that I'm going to be sore. But I try to do, either leg raises, sit-ups, something every day for core. And then I live right by Canfield Mountain in Dalton Gardens, Coeur d'Alene. So if there's not snow, at least two or three times a week, I'll run up and down that mountain a little bit, half hour run up, and then I try to mountain bike some. But yeah, just something every day and try to hit the weights in some way every day. And I do have, like I told him, I have the puke bike, the, what do you call those?
Assault bikes.
I call it the puke bike because that's the, you know, the most I've ever puked in a workout is from that thing where you just get to the point where like, your body can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a beautiful definition of what works for you.
Right.
I think you check a lot of boxes.
Sure.
I think for 53, you're in blank good shape. Like I'm trying not to swear on this thing, but dude, I was really impressed. I'm like, dude, I took you through a terrible workout today.
It was hard.
You did awesome, man. Cool. And you recovered fast.
Yeah.
You're in better shape than guys half your age.
And so here's my opinion. That doesn't say a lot about me, but it says even less about them.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, if that's you. But we have a problem in this country.
Go.
It's
I want
a
it.
Huge problem.
Give it to them.
And I look around and I'm like, I hope no one takes this wrong. But
I hope they do.
I'm a fan of fat shaming. And I even, like, my wife does think I'm crazy because I do this weird thing. Every morning I get out of bed. And I stand in front of a mirror without my shirt on and I fat shame myself, even though I'm fairly lean. I'm fairly lean and shredded, but I tell myself, I'm like, you fat mother, you're going to get after it today. And I've been doing this for 20 years and it's just derogatory punishment. And I'm like, you're too fat, bro. Get after it. I'm dead serious. I do this every day. And here's, I have some other reasons for that. One, I think that everything starts on the physical level, and I think it gravitates deeper to a spiritual level. So there's things like a commandment in the Bible. Jesus said, love your neighbor, right? So if you don't,
he said, love your neighbor right. as, you love, as yourself. You love yourself. And last I checked, y'all love you some me. Right. I love me. You love
it's
me.
It's a lot harder to love other people. But here's the point. If you don't physically do the thing that shows your neighbor love, help them do this, whatever it is that they need, you can't spiritually love someone.
Yeah.
So if you don't do the physical, you can never get to the spiritual level. And it's the same thing with, that's why I start with the physical. I look at myself and I'm like, get your butt in gear, dude. And I'm with you, you know, if barring something crazy happened, I really want to still be living this life 20, 30 years from now. I'm like, maybe I'll be the oldest elk hunter ever.
Without exception. That would be awesome.
Right? Let's do that.
Yeah, so, dude. I mean, to your defense, honestly, like the fat shaming yourself, I'm not sure if that's the best practice. Obviously that works for you.
It probably isn't.
But here's the truth, yeah. man. Like, I'm trying to be a really good parent, right? And everyone wants to be that. Like, it's a real cookie cutter thing to say. To be a parent, you can't be selfish.
Right.
Right. And I tend to be a pretty selfish person. I'm pretty self-absorbed in my self-absorption of elk hunting, fitness,
right.
working out. I make freaking YouTube videos for work and podcasts. Like, it's a lot about Dan.
Yeah.
You can't do that and be a great parent.
Right.
Okay. So I'm trying to have that division there, that line. And then I'm looking at my kids ages 7 and 9 and they're getting to that point, Sam, where I'm kind of like, okay, have I screwed up? Mm-hmm. Have I screwed up so far? Because I see a device in their hands and I see them on a device for 3 hours and I'm like, there's something like, when's the last time you kids went outside and played? I don't even hear kids. Like, I live in a neighborhood.
Right.
There's kids here. You wouldn't know it.
Right.
Where are they?
Yeah.
What are they doing? So I am very concerned about the couple generations back, man. There's going to be some serious consequences to all this technology. I am freaking out.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir, 100%. So thank God my wife is even stricter than I am on device stuff.
Oh, she's like me. I'm the strict one.
Oh, yeah. She's like my kids. We have laptops at our house, but they don't have phones. They don't have iPads. We don't have video games. We don't have any of that. It is get outside. We have a trampoline.
Yes.
We have a ping pong table in our house. We play a lot of that with the kids. But the problem is more is caught than taught. And what happens is they see dad. That's me. I'm the guilty one of my wife and I. I'm on my computer way too much. Watching elk-shaped videos, shamelessly. But no, I mean, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, dude, I do. No,
I get
mean.
Sucked into that vortex, and I work on my computer. Like, all my work is coming through my phone or computer, so I'm on that a lot. And so, yeah, I'm asking myself, I'm like, man, I've at home, I have to be on this less so they don't see me on it because they just want to do what dad does.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure that out. My wife harps on me a little bit about it, and I'm not mad at her about it. I'm like,
same here.
I want her to harp on me because I'm the same as you. Like when we were kids, you know, and again, I'm a little older than you, but I know when you were a kid, we were out on our bikes with our buddies. We were out running around. We were playing baseball or football in someone's yard. We were never inside.
Dude, Al Gore hadn't invented the internet when I was a kid.
Nope.
Yet.
Exactly.
And the advent of cell phones. I know. Yeah. Just shout out, Al. What up, Al Gore? But for real, like,
yeah.
The technology didn't exist and we didn't need it.
Right.
We didn't need it to thrive. And so my takeaway from our conversation is the caught, not taught statement. That line, that punchline is really real with me because a lot of my work is on a computer that edits at a high speed. I have another computer over here for work.
Gotcha.
Yep. I do everything on social media a lot through this. And then I got this young guy over here who works with me.
Right.
And is the lifeblood to how much quality content we put out.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to taught him to like shut it down at 5 because I'm the worst.
Yeah, me too.
And he's a lot like me. Like we could just work. He loves what we're doing. And I love what we're doing and it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
And so we got to be careful, right? And then our kids see us. So damn, that's a good point. Sam's busting it out, man.
it's a hard dilemma because you know, there's so many times a day where I want to take my cell phone and throw it out my truck window.
Yes.
Because here's how guilty I am. On the way driving from the archery place to your house.
Yes.
I caught myself 5 times looking at my phone.
Yes.
Texting someone. And yes. I'm like, dude, are you insane? Are you stupid, Sam?
We are on a freeway.
Yeah, we're on a freeway, right? And I'm like, just because you're following the guy. But yeah, and it's like, it's I catch myself all the time, and it's an addiction.
Yeah.
This device, but it's not, it's obviously, it's not just you or I. It is, it's an entire society of people. We're all addicted to these things. And so I'm thinking about it a lot. Like, I've got to put boundaries on myself to be like, okay, phone and computer go down at whatever time.
Yes.
And I'm not going to touch them till the next morning.
It'll be waiting right? for you
It'll
tomorrow.
It'll be there, right?
Yeah.
And, but we're in such a fast-paced world. And when you're running your own business,
yeah,
you want to respond to people really fast.
Yes.
Especially, you know, I'm in sales. And it's like, so someone hits me up, like, I'm on it within 30 seconds. I'm like, first guy wins.
You're not wrong, dude.
So it's really hard, and I know that causes my wife pain and frustration sometimes because she's like, "You're never available," and I'm like, "God, you're right." But how do I? So it's that balance, right? That's like all the financial responsibility is on my shoulders, so I need to make this happen. But at the same time, what good does it do at the end of our life and marriage if I closed every sale and I had millions of dollars and I didn't have time for my wife or kids. It's like, yeah,
you'd be poor.
This is the balance, right?
You would be very poor.
Yeah. I'd rather be fiscally poor.
Yep.
So there is a balance though. Like, we can do it. We just have to put those boundaries on ourselves and make, you know, and I've never been a law abiding. I don't mean I'm a criminal, but like laws and rules. And there are some kids, like my oldest son, it's like, here's what we do in this house. These are the rules. Boom. He will never break a rule. He's a rules guy. And then there's my youngest son. Every rule is meant to be stretched, broken, bent. And honestly, he's wired exactly like,
yeah, dude.
He's wired exactly like
that's
I am.
Me.
Yeah, me sure. too. I'm like, okay, I see that, but let's
test it out. Stretch it.
There's a yeah. workaround. And so, I'm that guy, like always pushing the edge of like, well, da, 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 da.
Damn, Sam, we got a lot in common.
Yeah, we do. In a we bad actually way. Do. We need boundaries. And, you know, like, you said earlier, like, you're pretty intense.
Yeah.
And that's what my wife says about me. She's like, God, you're just so like, you're these things, you're so intense about them. That's all you think about. And I'm like, yeah.
I blame elk hunting, man. I actually I didn't grow up very intense. But like, when I started getting my teeth kicked in by public land elk hunting, I hated failing.
Right.
It was like the first time in my life I just absolutely, like, besides, you know, maybe a slump in baseball.
Sure.
Right. But we all get a slump buster where can't really say that on this podcast, but you know what I mean? Like, baseball's a good analogy where like, it's a game of failure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Archery elk hunting is a game of failure.
Yeah.
But when you just keep coming back year after year and getting your teeth kicked in, it made me more rigid in what I was willing to do
right.
and participate and pour energy.
Yeah.
And here you are now in your 40s, not you're in your 50s. Is like, I'm in the most intense, like, tunnel vision dude ever, because I know what I want. And I want archery elk success, and I know what it takes.
Right. Yeah.
So I think, did you grow up intense, or did elk hunting have anything to do with making you so intense, or entrepreneurship make you so intense?
Yeah, I grew up competitive. I was born competitive. And so, like, all I thought about as a kid all the way through school was sports. That was it. I sat in, and I all the way through college, I was telling my wife the other night, I sat through however X amount of lectures in college, and all I was thinking about was body position for passing a volleyball, how to get my feet to the right spot, where am I going to hit that ball? Like, it was just
visualization.
And so now it is weird, like visualization all the time. Uh-huh. And I was like that. My first love of sports was basketball. And as a kid growing up, it's just all I thought about, And so I've always been, for whatever it is I'm chasing, and I remember before my wife and I got married, I was very clear with her. I said, I just want you to understand who you're marrying. I will always be chasing something that I'm trying to get better at and be successful at. I was like, it may change over the years or whatever. But I did tell her, I was like, but hunting elk is going to be a constant until I die. Constant. But I'll be chasing whatever. If I want to riding a mountain bike to the top of that mountain faster, like, if that becomes a thing, like, I'm going to be all in on it, and it's going to be pretty annoying for you. Are you okay with someone weird like this, you know? And so, yeah, I was surfing a lot when we first got married. Every morning, 6 a.m. up, out the door before work in the ocean. And yeah.
Like, that's a good life.
I remember 6 months after being married, she was like, are you seriously going to do this every day? And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yep. I sure am. I was like, this is the only reason I want to live in San Diego. Nothing else makes sense here for me anymore. So if I stop doing this, I am out of here immediately.
How did she respond to that, man?
Yeah, she just kind of, she's pretty mellow. She looked at me and just like, kind of like, yeah. And yeah, I think it really dawned on her at that point that, okay, this is who I have decided to live my life with. And, but she's pretty stubborn girl too. When she digs her heels in and makes up her mind,
yeah,
like she's not, she doesn't bend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's all about what's right and what's wrong in life. And so she decides like, this is the correct thing to do.
That's what's happening.
You are not bending her off of that path.
I like that.
So
man.
She's a cool chick.
Women are something else, man. It's cool that you found a bride that makes you better. Iron sharpens iron, and it's not to make you happier. I've said it before. It's to make you holier. Right. I think, which sounds like both of us need a lot of work in getting holier.
I think we do.
But the last thing I want to talk to you about
after
the workout was what your new side hustle, kind of main gig now. Obviously, I'm still rooting for Heatpraxia.
Amen.
You have other businesses that you're involved. You're a busy guy. You're an entrepreneur. But
yeah.
Talk about that last project that I might even dabble into. Yeah. Tell us the audience about that. I'm pretty stoked on that.
Yeah. So one of my business partners, his name is Joe Cruz. Hey, Joe. He has been in the sauna industry for a long time. He was like head sales guy for several sauna companies for a long time. And sauna is a small industry worldwide. If you're in it for 10 years, you know everyone who's anyone.
Sure.
So Joe knows everyone worldwide.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he and I were the kind of the brainchild of Heatpraxia. We were like, you think Coeur d'Alene is ready for a business like this? Da, da, da. Turns out it was. It's a great success. But we built Heatpraxia. Every sauna had different sauna specific lumbers. We built it as a working showroom because we knew people were going to be coming from out of town or a little bit too far away to have a membership. Or wanted a sauna at home. And we would be able to bring them through. Here, we'll comp you a visit to Heatpraxia. Check out all these saunas. You wouldn't want something like this at your house. Turns out everyone wants something like this at their house. So we started this company, Symmetry Sauna, where we're one of really three companies in the US who, at least on any large level, will do custom design, build, install, or even just sell you all the equipment you need to build your own sauna. And we'll send you the build kit, elevations, how to, and we're on phone support to help you or your contractor build your sauna. So we're doing that nationwide now. And then we actually have build teams who do everything local for us, you know, Spokane, North Idaho, Idaho, Montana. We'll go build those ones. But, you know, I just sold one to Florida a week ago. We're not going to build that sauna in Florida, but he's got a good contractor and we're going to guide his contractor through that process. So custom sauna it's just a huge thing right now. Like we got a report from house.com that said last year sauna interest in the US was up 250%. This year, they think it's going to be up another 800% for in-home saunas. So it does feel like we started a company, you know, a couple years ago, this one, but at the right time for sauna and cold plunge.
Yes.
We're partnering with a couple cold plunge companies.
Who do you recommend on the cold plunge front? Because I am in the market for a sauna. I'm in the market for a cold plunge.
Yep.
I've done ice baths so many that I just, I get annoyed with people showing ice baths because I feel like prideful Dan's like, dude, I've done 500 ice baths in my life.
Right.
Because I had to.
Yeah.
I took a big break from them because I just had done them so much, but they work so well. They're undeniable. And who do you stand behind as a good, like, at home?
Right.
Maybe the cheaper version, maybe the nice mid-range, maybe the high end. The water's floating. It's at 32.9 degrees and it's filtrated.
Let's run through it real quick. Starting on what I would call the bargain end, there are one of our business partners. There's four of us that own Symmetry, and we're all totally different human beings in what we're good at.
That's cool.
So it's the first time in my life I've ever been part of any companies where I have a team.
Yeah.
Because it was always just Sam running a business where you're wearing 12 different hats and you have to do everything. So it's super cool with Symmetry. I'm just the sales guy.
Yeah.
And I freaking love it. I talk to people. But so we're partnering with a company called Blue Cube, and they're out of Oregon. And I would say they're probably the most high-end premier cold plunge company.
Okay.
They just installed one for Tim Kennedy, yeah. MMA UFC guy this week. Then he reached out about a sauna. So him and I are talking about saunas. They just installed in Joe Rogan's Onnit gym in Austin, Texas, Blue Cubes. So but their cheap stuff are $14,000 for their cheap cold plunge.
Right.
So very high-end, aesthetically beautiful, and they work awesome. But most people are like, okay, that's out of the ballpark of reality. And I understand that. So then we have another company called Breathe Degrees, like take a breath, Breathe Degrees. And they're out of San Diego. They have a couple locations where they do breath work, cold plunge, sauna. But they manufacture their own. That's more in the $6,000 to $8,000 range for a Breathe Degrees. And those are super good in-home units. And then on down the line, we just had a partner look up the other day. How many cold plunge companies are there now in the U.S. that are selling cold plunge? 1,200.
Yeah.
1,200 different brands on the market. So in the past 2 years, 2 or 3 years ago, there wasn't 100.
No way. It's blown up.
This is how fast it's blown up. So there's everything from, you know, go to your local tractor supply company.
That's what we did.
Get a trough, drill a hole in it, yeah. Hook up your own chiller, and you've got a legitimate cold plunge that actually filters water, works well, and it's going to work as well as 90% of the stuff on the market.
Yeah.
It just won't be as pretty.
Yeah.
But it's more, I mean, for me, I would rather have someone doing that than just don't do it. It's function, you know.
If I was to do one right today, I would go buy, I saw a Grizzly cooler that just came out.
Yes.
You see what I'm talking about? Yep. Where it's like literally, I don't know what the liters is in it, but it's like the biggest thing ever.
Yeah.
I would just fill that sucker up, throw some bags of ice, especially where I live, where you live. We have cold temperatures from November all winter, till April.
All winter, the
water's
cold.
Ice is going to stand there, and I can just hop in that thing.
It's funny you say that, the Grizzly cooler, because we met a dude, he lives in Arizona, who is taking Grizzly coolers, and he's retrofitting them with their own electric chiller on them and filter, and he's selling.
I believe
he's doing great, too. Yeah. And those are like a $1,000 option or something,
Where
you never have to drain the water or change it. And so there's so many things you can do, but, you know, suck it up, get in cold water. And then
are you guys doing like low, like we'll call it the bargain kits for people, for schmucks that listen to this podcast? Like, what if somebody wanted to just maybe not have a custom, but like just they want a good, decent sauna.
Yeah.
They're into the contrast. Right. They see the benefit. What do you guys offer, stuff like that?
We do, yeah. So we don't go, we don't go, what I'm going to say, China dumpster diving. And what I mean by that is,
I like that.
The majority of all your infrared freestanding modular saunas, they're all manufactured overseas, and the majority of them are built with toxic woods, toxic wood glues, super high EMFs coming out of those heaters. And you can take an EMF reader and measure it in an infrared
sauna. A terrible anti-health idea.
So you're literally getting toxins while you're supposed to be detoxifying. And those are the ones, I don't know if you've ever heard, like a brand goes to Costco or Home Depot to die.
Right.
And so once you're in those places, it sounds like, oh, that'd be great to get in there, right? But that's where you go to die, because what they do is drive the price low. It's a race to the bottom. And so the stuff you buy at Costco, I hate to say it, is it's the Walmart Costco junk, your $1,900 sauna. I would rather have you not sauna, to tell you the truth.
I love it. Tell us the truth.
So the kind of the lowest thing we have is we're manufacturing our own infrared sauna, and it's also a combo. So we have a small traditional heater in it and infrared, so you're getting benefits from both.
Yep.
And that's $6,500.
Dude, that's
out the door to the house, and they're beautiful little things. You can take them apart in an hour, move them to a house if you move, set them back up in an hour. They're really easy to do. But that's, you know, for us, for Symmetry, that's as low as we already decided. That's as low as we're ever going.
Yeah.
One price point. Two, the quality is really good. You can't go less quality without turning into junk. So that's where we drew the line. And then all the way up to Joe just sold a sauna to a guy in North Carolina for $170,000 is what that one's going to cost.
Yep.
And it's one of the coolest things you'll ever see.
It better
be. It's a work of art.
Yeah.
That's also a sauna.
Yeah.
It's wild. So the range runs, you know, people call, how much is a sauna? I'm like, well, 6,500 to right now, 170,000.
Yeah, at the moment.
where do you fit?
And what's the website so people could check it out?
Symmetrysauna.com.
Okay, you guys, we'll leave a link in the show notes. Are you on Instagram?
I am. Samster Rogers. Samster.
Okay. I'm going to put a link to that just so people can check out with you. Yeah. And
you don't want to follow my Instagram.
This was fun day, guys. So basically, Sam and I were going to go do recovery protocols at his joint. I will keep it in my prayers, but I think, like you said, you have the best attitude. Like, something good's going to come out of this.
Yeah,
you,
for sure.
And with your entrepreneur spirit, Sam's going to be all right. And maybe we'll have you back on in a year, find out about what happened with your biz.
That'd be
how
cool.
Symmetry Sauna's doing and how your elk season went.
Right.
But the elk are in trouble, man. I saw you shoot today. You're fit. You have elk knowledge. You know their behavior, their biology. You know where to go. Just the elk are in trouble, brother.
Well, we can only hope. I mean, yeah, we talked about it. Every year you kill an elk and you think you got it figured out. And then after 2 days of not getting a shot at elk, you're like, it's not going to happen.
This is impossible. How did I ever do it?
The demons in my head start talking to me and they're like, you can't, like, it's too hard. And it feels impossible.
I say that to myself every year. How did I ever kill an elk with a bow? I don't know how I did it.
Right. Yeah. And then it just comes, if you stay, I do tell like newer bow hunters, I'm like, you will get multiple opportunities. If you could take the whole month of September and you're committed to getting up every morning and being out there all day, you're going to get your chances. Don't worry.
Fact.
Yeah. Like, you're going to get opportunities. There's enough elk out there, and you'll catch one at a bad moment and the wind is right. You'll get your chance. But, you know, if you have 2 days to go elk hunting, good luck.
It's tough. Right? It can be done. Hard. You killed real early last year yourself.
Right.
You know, but guys, this was fun for us, man. Sam, we'll check him out. We'll leave these links. Be like Sam. Take good care of your family. Autonomy in your own schedule. That's something you need. Be an entrepreneur. Gamble or bet on yourself. Follow his fitness philosophies as far as just, man, I got to do this. I got to do that every week. And there's just boxes to check, and he gets the work done. He shoots his bow. He's a good shot. He's a family man. He loves Jesus. This is our kind of people, guys. Thanks for listening. Separation is in the preparation. We'll catch you on the next one. Today's podcast is brought to you by MagView. I think this is the best digiscoping solution on the market. Made in America, lifetime warranty. No silly phone case for your phone. It's a little magnet strip that goes on the back of your phone or your phone case. And it comes with an adapter for any of your glass binoculars or spotters that protects it. It's easy to use and operate, and you can trust that your lifetime warranty, it'll be a lifetime investment.